Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to TSR Live, everyone. I'm your host, Brian Moss. I'm here with Larry Marley. Larry, how you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great. It's a bye week. And you know, I tweeted out the other day that bye weeks are terrible for fans. And they are, because they just suck. Because, you know, if you're a football fan, like you get Wednesday, Thursday. This week we have a Thursday game, obviously. But you get closer to Saturday, you just start getting amped up, you know, Thursday, starting to think about it, you know, think about the game. And then, you know, Friday night, you're in full, like, pregame mode. And then so everything sort of builds up for it. But on a bye week, it's like, it's Friday. Okay. I mean, yeah, you know, it's great. But I don't have to work tomorrow. I sleep in. But so – but now for players, and there's a definite divide on bye weeks, Brian. So if you're an underclassman, freshman and sophomore specifically, bye weeks are like, you know, you're going home, you maybe go see your girlfriend, see your mom, get your clothes washed, that kind of thing. But for upperclassmen, for me, bye weeks were, you know, by the time I was a junior or a senior, it was, we'd go play golf, go and get extra treatment, but you know, you go that Friday, you'd head out, go play golf or do something. You know, one time we made a road trip up and watched one of our conference. Like, we went to see Eastern Kentucky, watched that game. I mean, you do fun things like that, just kind of relax. And so this was a fairly timely bye week, because of our opponent, right? I mean, don't you agree with that?
Definitely. Oh, definitely. And before we go any further, I want to wish Isaac, you know, he's under the weather. Wish him well.
Oh, yeah.
So get well, Isaac, and we'll see you next week. But go ahead and carry on.
Well, no. I was just saying, for those of you, anybody who's listening to me, and by the way, for all of you who do that, thank you very, very, very much. We had some tweets last week that they really missed the show, so we appreciate that. This is my favorite game of the year, and I like it for a lot of reasons. Number one, first and foremost, because the young men that are going to be playing in Liberty Bowl Thursday night, these are kids, and I think Isaac did an interview with Coach Ken, correct? Or at least I said he was going to.
Yes.
We have had on your show, I've been able to do that, and then on John and my show, we've had assistant coaches come on and talk about what these young men go through on a daily basis, and what, you know, their schedule is. And this is not including football, just to serve our country, to agree to serve our country, and then to do it, the discipline, the coursework, all the things that it takes. These young men should be applauded. And not only that, there's some pretty damn good football players. And so this is my favorite game because of that. And then stylistically, they're not like anybody else we're going to play. I mean, they're the total antithesis of everybody else in our conference. So it's my favorite game because of all of that. And I know we've taken some L's. Sucks to lose. But I can honestly say I have never regretted a single loss. I may lament a loss. We should have won last year. But I've never regretted losing a single game because I know these are some really, really good young men.
And we touched on it before. Both of these teams have a bye week coming into this game. Navy's 2-0, wins over Holy Cross and Eastern Carolina. Memphis obviously has, you know, three wins over Ole Miss, Southern, and South Alabama. Who do you think that bye week favored more?
Memphis. Because of exactly what I just said. And we're not talking about injury, because I don't know that it really helped Memphis with any of our major injuries. I don't think Patrick Taylor's coming back. But I think more than anything, it gives you extra time to prepare for an offense that you're not going to see any other time. And yeah. So from a defensive standpoint, it gives you more time to prepare, get the players going through it. You know, what are your reads? What are your progressions? And as a defense, when you play we used to play teams that ran the wishbone, which is very similar stylistically to this, in that you'd have a quarterback, you'd have the wishbone, and you'd have some misdirections, and then you had a man. And also then you get prepared for the cut blocks, let's say, for what it is, because you don't really see that as much anywhere else. So, but yeah, I mean, I think this is – it helps Memphis more for certain. They haven't played the level of competition. Obviously, us playing Ole Miss gives, you know, as far as three wins, certainly that's a better win than anything they have.
Yes.
And
when you look at – go ahead, sorry.
No, you finished. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, with these games, they're – you know, they're awful tough games. You take out that first game where Navy won by 25. I mean, the past three games have been you know, pretty close. In 16, Navy won by 14 points. In 17, they, Memphis won by 3. And then last year, I mean, Memphis was ahead going into the fourth quarter. I mean, they were winning 21-9, and then just, you know, for whatever reason, couldn't do anything in the fourth quarter and ended up losing that game. But, these games are usually tough. And when you look at these games, this is only going to be the second time that neither team has been ranked, because the first three times they played, one of these two teams have been ranked.
Right. Well, Memphis was almost ranked. I mean, we were 26th, I believe. So, I mean, I think last year's sort of aberration, if you will, for Navy is probably – that's probably gone. They'll be back to being better this year. I don't know that they'll be what they were, say, in 2016, 2015, 2016, when I think they may arguably have been, you know, one of the best teams in the conference. They certainly were. But I don't know that they're that. But they certainly are really, really good. One of the things I think that's going to be interesting is that generally what you see, we saw this in the ACC with Georgia Tech, and we've seen that somewhat here in the AAC. Once schools build up tape on the triple option, the defensive coordinators, as long as you can have some continuity in your coaching, they'll sort of build up a game plan. That because when you first see it, it's really hard. But after a couple of years, tape builds up, and I think you're able to sort of get the tendencies. So I think that's another thing that will help us.
Yeah, I'm looking at the stats. Total offense Memphis is 26th in the nation, Navy's 22nd. Passing, obviously, you know, Memphis is going to have a big advantage there because Navy doesn't really pass.
Sure.
I mean, Navy's 125th in the nation, but we all know they don't pass. Memphis is 52nd. Running, that's where Navy, you know, will kill you. They're first in the nation with,
mm-hmm.
you know, averaging 371 yards per game. Memphis is 31st with 227. Scoring offense, you know, Navy's, you know, averaging 43.5 points per game for 16th in the country, and Memphis is 32nd with 37.3. And when you look at both of these offenses, you know, what stands out to you? Obviously, you know, Navy with their triple option. But do you see anything different out of this game than the previous four games that they played?
Well, I think you're going to see – well, and I said the same thing last year, but I think Memphis will be able to run the ball on Navy. And I think that's – one of the things with Navy is that their offense is so plotting and predicated that if you can do the same thing to them, if you can run the football and score and keep the ball away from them and shorten the game – and you've got the lead. Well, once that happens, they have no real chance at coming back. Now, last year was an aberration because we fumbled the football. But
yes,
and I'll say this: I think if the same Memphis team that played like Houston at the end of the year, if they played, they would beat them by four touchdowns. But Memphis needs to establish the running game, and I think what you see in those stats is that Memphis is very balanced. And we need to be that again. We don't need to be pass heavy because what Navy tries to get you into is when you get the ball, we've got to score. We got to score now. You know, push the ball down the field, and that's not what we need to do. We know we've run the ball on everybody we faced this year. Period. We know we can run the football, and you need to do that. And so, when you look at the stats, we're balanced. We need to make sure that we're balanced Thursday night.
Yeah, and Memphis, you know, ran well against, you know, Navy last year. Henderson had over 200 yards that game. And when you look at Navy's, you know, defensive stats, I mean, it's sort of skewed, even though they have the fourth-ranked defense in the country. You know, you always point to look who they face, you know, Holy Cross and Eastern Carolina. So, I mean, it's not like it's a tough test, you know, for those guys.
Right, ECU – we hope they come back soon. You know, hey guys, come back soon. We'd love to see you. But they're not there yet, and they've got a ways to go. So hopefully, like, we'll see them come back. But right now, if you look at the level of competition, they just haven't faced that. And you know, this is going to be their first big test Thursday night, and you know, our speed, our size on the offensive line should be extremely telling, you know, in this game. So that's my bet.
Yeah, Memphis opened, you know, depending on what, you know, website you look at, anywhere from 11.5 to 14-point favorite. Did that shock you a little bit?
No. No, I think in fact, I 14.5. If you could tease that down to 14, I might take that because I think Memphis wins this game by double digits. Yep. I know I'm giving away a little in the future, but yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
And looking at Coach Norvell's, you know, stats, this is the third time in 4 years that he started 3-0. But every single time he started 3-0, he's lost the fourth game. 2016, started 3-0, then lost to Ole Miss 48-28. 2017, started 3-0 again, then lost to Central Florida 40-13. Are you a little worried that this may, you know, without giving score or anything like that, or, you know, do you think that, you know, maybe in the back of his mind at all for this game, that he's never been
4-0? Yeah, no, I doubt that. I mean, you're looking just forward at this point. I can't imagine he's even thinking about that, and streaks are made to be broken. Do I know that we're going to win this game? No, I obviously I don't know. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
But No, I don't think that's playing into it. If anything, it's probably more he's sitting there thinking, how do we keep these kids focused for 2 weeks, before you go into a conference opener? And the fact that it's a conference opener is a big deal.
Yeah, and when you look at Navy, I think, you know, it all starts and ends with Malcolm Perry, leading passer, obviously leading rusher. And it's easy to say all you have to do is contain him. But realistically, how hard is it to stop one person in that triple option?
It's extremely hard, and here's why. So as you're coming, I mean, again, I'm going on my own experience, you know, facing the wishbone. So as you're coming up, the quarterback has the ball, all right? And he can dictate not just direction, but he can dictate the pace of the play. And so when you're watching the game, what I want fans to watch is not just the direction, but he's watching the blocks and he's dictating, you know, when they attack. So what you'll see is he'll hold back, or maybe he runs directly because he sees a hole, or he sees that he's got a guy to option, and your linebacker hasn't got to the spot yet. So those are things that the quarterback can dictate, and you just can't control that unless you are penetrating into, you know, past the line of scrimmage, which you really don't want to do in this offense, because that's where creases are made, and then they gash you for long runs. What you really want to do is read and react. So that's what I'm talking about, is that you have to take the play and make it extend it out as far as you can and give the quarterback as few options. So it's really, really, really hard to stop an individual player. What you really have to do is stop an individual type of play. Take, for example, what they're going to want to do, they're going to fake. They'll either fake or they'll hand the ball off the middle, which that's another thing. You've got to stop the dive. You've got to control that. Take the dive away, and then you send out the option, okay? You're not going to do it perfect every time. And we don't have Alabama's athletes to just out-athlete them. You know, we're just going to beat you to point A. Well, we don't have that. We got great athletes, but we don't have that. And so when you say stop an individual, what you're really saying is I need to control an individual type of play, because what he does is he'll beat you to a spot on the field, and that's really, really hard to do.
And when you look at this game, I think one of the things that Memphis fans can take comfort in is, you know, Memphis now has a defensive coordinator in Adam Fuller. I mean, what he's done in the first three games to me is amazing. Now, I went back. Now, I don't think Coach Fuller has ever faced the triple option, not as a defensive coordinator, but as a regular coach. I couldn't find a game where he has. But he's an experienced coach, and obviously he has, you know, he's watched game films and has the other coaches, you know, on the staff that, you know, has faced Navy. But with the read and react, like you were talking about, you see that with Memphis's defense this year. So, I mean, how much is the fact that Memphis has Coach Fuller? Shouldn't that be a big confidence boost for Tiger fans?
Well, what you want to look for is the fact that you've gone to the 4-3. And so you've got guys that are lined up up front, and you're in gaps as opposed to head up when you're in the 3-4. And so what you've got to do is control your gap with your man up front. And if you can do that, then you can extend. And that's what I'm talking about, not getting gashed with the dive and not getting gashed with the, you know, if you can do that, if you can take and I can control my gap that I'm in, gap, this is what they call the A gap, the B gap, the C gap. Mm-hmm. That's what they're talking about. So when you're in the 4-3, you have two guys in the A gap and two guys in the B gap. That's the gap between the center and the guard, and a gap between the guard and the tackle. And that end that's out there can go between the B gap and the C gap. So sometimes he'll go and he'll line up outside the tackle. Sometimes he'll line up head up on the tackle. But either way, he's got to control that gap. And so, and what you want your linebacker then to be able to do is come in and make a play in whatever space that you're controlling your gap. And so now you've got a space that you're taking away that spot as an option. And so what I would see, I hope Coach Floor does, whenever you play these kinds of offenses that are sort of complex like this, use the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. In other words, you want your defenses to flow, not attack. And that's what I was talking about earlier, is you don't want to rush up the field. Now, if you get an obvious passing down, well, then it's just like any other offense, right? You're going to try to get to the quarterback because you know. But they have very, very few obvious passing downs. I mean, you know, it would be late in the game, down by seven or whatever, and they're trying to get down the field. That's one thing. We saw that in 2017. But you know, this year, what I fully expect you'll see is our offense making plays at or just on our side of the line of scrimmage, you know, 1 and 2 yard gains. And if you can do that consistently to Navy, you will take – I mean, because they cannot go down the field that way. That's not the way the offense is designed. They can't do that. You know, 1, 2 yard gains all of a sudden turns into 3rd and 4, 3rd and 6. They're not geared for that. If you can do that, then you're going to take away a lot of, you know, a lot of their offense. What they want is 3rd and 2, 4th and 1. That's what they're looking for.
And with everything you said, you know, as a defensive coordinator, going against the triple option, wouldn't you rather have a 4-3 defense than a 3-4 defense? Or, you know, or would you have it the other way? Which would you prefer going against a triple option?
It depends on what your personnel is. So I've been saying for years that it's you can run the 3-4. Actually, it's funny. I was on a show last week. This very subject came up, and he was like, "Oh, well, if you've got the 3-4, you can have so many more blitzing options, blah 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 blah." I said, "That's great if you've got four hella linebackers that you know." Yeah, this guy was obviously like a fan of one of the big major schools, you know, Georgia, Clemson, you know, one of those schools that just have you know linebackers just growing on trees. And that's great if you've got a 4'6", 3", 260-pound guys that run a 4.4 40. Hey, yeah, run the 3.4. Minus that, when you're running against a running team, and you can have your 7 guys right at the line of scrimmage, and you're not trying to have your linebackers playing, say, 5 yards off the ball. Yes. I would probably, and again, it's all personnel packages. But for our personnel, I've been saying for years and years and years, the 4-3 is a better run for whatever team we play. It doesn't matter. But this is a better package for us.
Taking a break from you know, the Memphis and Navy game, looking back at the AAC action last week, is there any game that stood out to you that was you know, a wow factor?
Oh man, you got to go to UCF and Pitt, right? I mean, that's a well, or maybe SMU TCU. I mean, maybe those are both. I didn't think, you know, and UCF's not the first team to go to Pitt, and yet, you know, I think it happened to Ohio State a couple of years ago, right? Maybe even last year. I don't even remember. I mean, that's a tough place to play. It really is. You go up there and you know, and they had the game. They were up 10 in the fourth quarter, and you know, let it get away from them. It did. But then the SMU TCU thing. If you had bet me, I would have bet $1 million that SMU would not score 40 points on TCU.
I would agree with you. That was surprising.
I would have bet, you know, I understand it's a rivalry game and all that. That was a shocker. It was as shocking as UCF losing to Pitt, and I believe that was at TCU, if I'm not incorrect.
Yeah.
So I mean, and if you haven't been to Dallas, so TCU's in Fort Worth, SMU is in Dallas. They're separated by, oh, it's probably 30 miles. It's not that close, really. North Texas is actually closer to SMU than TCU is. But so the fan base is, TCU's fan base looks at SMU similar to the way Ole Miss looks at Memphis. There are some differences. SMU has had some really, really good players over the years and really, really good teams. They've got a lot more history than Memphis does. But still, I mean, the fan bases they look down on SMU, and I good for SMU. I mean, I saw TCU a couple of weeks ago, and I saw they were ranked 25th, and I was like, man, that's not the 25th best team in the country, not even close.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that they're bad. It's just they're not the 25th best team in the country. So, but yeah, that's a shocker. That was a shocker as well.
There was a lot of good games, you know, to me that were wow. You know, I didn't expect. You know, I knew Tulane and Houston would be a good game, but
yeah,
you know, with Tulane coming, but you know, and they 17 points in the fourth quarter to, you know, to beat Houston, and especially
yeah.
you know. In the final second,
yeah,
that was a great game.
Houston. Now, one thing about Houston, they were playing their fourth game in like 21 days or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They ran out of gas, Brian. I mean, I'm not giving them an excuse. I mean, I love it when they cook it like they did, you know, cooking it big time. But, but they were exhausted. Those kids were tired. And I certainly would expect when we go to Houston, I wouldn't expect that defense in the fourth quarter.
Oh, other games, you know, what about Tulsa beating undefeated Wyoming? That was somewhat of a surprise to me as well. And then
they spotted on points.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
But Temple and Buffalo, I mean, who would have thought, you know, Temple after beating 21 or 24 ranked Maryland, and then Buffalo, I mean, earlier in the year lost to, you know, Liberty. You know, so, I mean, just
yep,
a weird weekend for the AAC, entertaining week. But, just a lot. Even though Memphis didn't play, there was a lot of good AAC action going on.
Yeah, the Temple game was surprising. That is a Jekyll and Hyde team. They're going to be Jekyll and Hyde all year. When we play them, let's just hope we get Dr. Jekyll.
yes.
Because if you get Mr. Hyde up there, as Maryland found out, they can be tough. We haven't done this, but we need to do this 1 week, actually. That's a good idea. Power ranking for the AAC. If I was going to power rank the AAC right now, Memphis is the only undefeated team, I believe. So
SMU. SMU's 4-0.
SMU, that's right. SMU and Memphis. SMU
and
Memphis.
And Navy, they only played twice, but, you know, given what they they played,
yeah,
I wouldn't, okay. Yeah.
Right, right. So SMU and Memphis. Memphis probably gets the push, but I don't know. I mean, they beat TCU. I don't know. That's a tough one. And they've won two road games, too, SMU has, because they beat Arkansas State at Arkansas State. And that's not to be underrated, because that was when their coach was coming back after his wife had died. And
yeah, it was
that,
an emotional game.
I've got a little experience with this. I was standing on the field when the Marshall players who had not been on the plane, it was the – God, I can't remember, Brian. It was – this was 91. I don't know what year that was. 20 years after the after the plane crash, and we're all standing out there, and the player families are all standing out there, the players that didn't die, and I'm just looking at my coach like, God, we're going to get murdered. I mean, they're going to kill us. I wanted to beat us. that's a tough one, right? I mean, and they went in there and won that game. That's a tough game. You know, hats off to SMU. They sure have shown some moxie. But Memphis SMU would be near the top, and then UCF. But really, where I was headed was the bottom. So the ECU probably at the bottom, right? I mean,
or UConn.
Either one. Okay, UConn. Like, they suck. Yeah, you're right. UConn but what I'm really getting at here is how much better the West is than the East.
Oh yes.
I mean, there's just no gimmies. I mean, Memphis you look at what I thought was going to be a softer stretch in the schedule, which is coming up. We've got after Navy, then you've got Louisiana Monroe, and then you've got then you start getting
at Temple.
At Temple. You're at Temple,
and home
and
against
then
home against Tulane.
Home against Tulane. So you know when you're looking at the schedule for the beginning of the year, you're thinking, oh well, Temple, new coach, what's going on there? Then you got Tulane coming in, but you know, revenge factor and all that. Now I'm sitting here looking at it going, geez, I mean, look, this is not the SEC West. Let's not kid ourselves here. But I mean, it's pretty doggone tough, and I, there's really not going to be any, like, gimmies. And so we're going to have to go take it, you know.
No, I definitely agree. And before we go into, you know, well, actually, we can go into, you know, this week coming up, you know, the AAC slate, and before we get to the predictions for the Memphis game. First game we'll take a look at, you know, Saturday at 3:30, Georgia Tech at Temple. Who do you see there?
Again, they're a Jekyll and Hyde team, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you gonna get the team that played Buffalo, or are you gonna get the team that played Maryland? Georgia Tech is not very good. Let's say it. You know, they are a middle of the road, maybe lower end Power Five school. And so my feeling is, if Temple shows up, the Temple that we know is there, they should win the game.
When you take a look at Georgia, I mean, they lost the Citadel and barely beat South Florida.
Right. I mean, barely.
So to me, Temple definitely, you know, should win this. Isaac had Temple as well. And we got
I think Temple wins the game.
And SMU at South Florida. SMU wins candidly.
Yeah.
You know, Isaac has SMU as well.
You know, I think South Florida may be the third worst team in our conference.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, they're probably a notch above East Carolina, a couple notches maybe above. And I always forget Connecticut's in the conference because I really just wanted to go ahead and leave.
They're gone. This was their last year anyway, I believe.
Good riddance. And that's going to bring up an interesting point. Is Charlie Strong there at the end of the year? And I don't know. I don't think so. That's my bet.
I don't think so either. Next game, not a bad game. It's Cincinnati at Marshall. Isaac has this as an upset. He has picked, Marshall with the win. What are your thoughts on this game?
No.
I don't think so. I think the reason why he picked them because it's, you know, the typical trap game, because after Marshall, they have Central Florida. So that may be the reason he picked them. I'm not sure.
I get that.
I just don't think so.
Well, here's something people may not know is that Cincinnati and Marshall are not separated by that much geography.
Mm-mm.
I want to say, because when we went to go play Marshall, we actually would go through Cincinnati. And you take the loop you know, actually the city. But and it's right there. Huntington is right on the border of Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia. So, you know, and the reason I'm mentioning that is because if they were playing somebody who was, you know, just whatever, somebody state or whatever in the middle of nowhere, then I could almost see that. But when you're playing someone who's a little more local and you know, your fans, it's just different. And you're just thinking about it more. So I doubt they creep up on them. And Cincinnati's clearly a better team. Cincinnati will run all over Marshall. Marshall's fine. They've got a good team. They played Boise tough. I mean, I saw it. Mm-hmm. Saw them do it. But no, I'd be shocked. Oh, I'd be surprised. Not shocked. I was surprised.
Next up, East Carolina at Old Dominion. And Old Dominion, they've been playing some team tough. You know, played Virginia, you know, well. I mean, they had a lead, I think, in the beginning. So that one, that was pretty interesting. So this one, you know, Isaac has Old Dominion winning. And believe it or not, I have them winning too.
Me too. I East Carolina's got a ways to go. Again, hope we see you soon, guys.
Yes. Next up, it's just going to be a bloodbath. Central Florida going against UConn. I mean,
yeah, and they're going to be pissed. I mean, and I was going to ask where the game is. It doesn't matter.
No.
Whatever it is, take the over and take the points and lay the points and yeah, because they're going to win that game. It's going to be like 50 something. Well, did you see the final score of that Ohio State Miami of Ohio? Yeah, like that.
Next up, I think might be a sneaky good game as well. Houston at North Texas. Isaac has Houston. Man, I flip on this one back and forth. I think Houston wins, but I think North Texas can give them a good run.
Well, North Texas is going to give them a run, but you're going to see a rested, fully loaded Houston team. And is Derek King the best player in our conference? I mean,
I don't know. I would say he's up there. I don't know about the best, but he's up there.
Yeah, I don't know if he's the best, but he's way up there, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You know, we might can start. I had somebody – I was on a show last week, and they asked me if he was on pick your Power 5 really good team, you know, let's say if he was playing for Oklahoma State or Kentucky. I mean, I don't know that he'd you know, win the Heisman. But he'd be in the mix because the numbers that he puts up, and I know they lost, but it wasn't anything he did. I mean, he played his brains out in that game. And he looked great against Oklahoma. Looked real good against Washington State. So, yeah, he's a problem. The kid's a problem. And I like Holgorsen's offense. He runs Holgorsen's offense well. So, I think Houston wins that game.
In the game we all want to see Thursday night, Navy at Memphis. Isaac has a close one. He says 31-24 Memphis. Who you have?
I'm going to take Memphis. I don't know that it's even going to be that close. It's going to be a good game. I'm going to say 38-24. I think we get a touchdown in the fourth quarter and then put it on ice, and then maybe they score late to bring the score in. But yeah, I see double digits.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I do think Memphis wins. I mean, when you take a look at the past 10 games, Memphis has covered the spread, you know, 8 of the 10 times. And I do see them, you know, winning by double digits. Sometimes I say this may be a high-scoring game. I can see 40-24. But, you know, I go back, but I think what I'll ultimately do is come back down to something like, I'd say 30 to 14 range is what I think. And with
thoughts? You're probably – well, I had it – I actually was going to go 31-17, but I got to thinking, we'll probably kick a field goal late to put it away, and then they may get a garbage touchdown at the end. So, I just said 34-24. Or 38-24, I'm sorry. But I'm just thinking it's going to be that's how this is going to play out. Like, we're going to get the lead, and because again, if we do what we should do, don't do the smartest man in the room kind of thing. Just go out there, do what you do, and on offense, that's the trick. Because do what you do on offense, don't change, because that's what they try to get you to do. Is change what you do on offense.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like teams that press in basketball. Like, once you get over the half court line, do what you do. And then don't worry about the press, because they're trying to speed you up and get you to do something you don't do. Well, don't do that. You do what you do on offense. And that's what we need to do. So just go out, do what you do. We run the football. And we throw to keep people off balance so that we can run the football. But that's what we do, is we go out there with our big offensive line and we run the football.
We'll switch gears a little bit and then just reflect on the first quarter of the season, three games in.
25% of the season's over.
Yes, already.
Yep.
Looking at the Pro Football Focus, I wrote about it, top five offensive players for Memphis, at least 50 snaps. And you had Antonio Gibson coming in at fifth spot with the overall grade of 72. Then you had DeMonte Coxey, overall grade of 73.1. Then you had Kenneth Gainwell, 73.3. Dylan Parham, 73.6, and the number one guy, Dustin Woodard, at 77.2. When you look at this offense, who do you have as the offensive player of the year so far early in this season?
I think you got to go Gainwell. He's done it all. He's caught the ball out of the backfield, run the ball. He's been the most dynamic player on the field. I just don't see anybody else. Now, if you want to go for a group, the offensive line has answered a whole bunch of questions so far, don't you think? Question mark coming in. But especially pass blocking. We said two things our first show. I said they should be able to run the football, and with their size and their athleticism, they should be able to pass block. But we know they should be able to run the football.
Oh, definitely.
Brady has not been pressured that much, and we've run the football. So, that's why Dustin Woodard is the highest. But, seriously, the offensive line has really, really stepped up.
Hey, speaking of Dustin Woodard, I was thinking about this. I like to write an article trying to get some opinions. Is he, not necessarily the best offensive lineman Memphis has ever had, but maybe the most versatile offensive lineman Memphis has ever had, because he can play multiple positions. The great offensive lines, how would you rate or think about Dustin Woodard?
Well, I'd say he's had the most storied career, because he started as a guard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
recruited
and
as
moved,
a center, but when he got here for the first 3 years, guard.
Well, that's because Drew Kaiser was here for 100 years.
Oh yes.
he was the quarterback for UAB that was there for 100 years. He was on that plan. But anyway, Hackney, Daryl Hackney, I'll never forget that son of a guy. And now, of course, he's moved back to center. And here's the thing. He's been great everywhere he's been placed. So
consistent too, yeah.
Consistently great. Now, I don't athletically, he's probably not. I mean, I don't think. Let's put it another way. Like Drew Kaiser was a great center. Ronald Leary, obviously, tremendously athletic.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had, you know, really, really, really good offensive linemen that have come through. But I think your point about how flexible, moving around from position to position and being good. Hey, look, let's face it, his move was a question mark. Like, we knew he had experience, but how are you going to handle, you know,
mm-hmm.
being center? That's an issue. How are you going to do that?
And he had a great test in game one.
Right. Yes. And look, I mean, I don't know that I'd make him the offensive player of the year, but certainly, you know, he would be, if you want to say he's one of the best players on this team and he's had one of the best careers of any offensive lineman, yeah, I'd agree with that.
Switching over to the defensive side, Pro Football Focus, at number five, Jacoby Francis, you know, cornerback, graded 75.4. Austin Hall,
yep.
75.5. John Tate, 76.4. O'Brien Goodson, 76.7. And this one shocked me. Quindell Johnson, 82.3. Is according to them, has been the best Memphis player in the first three games. What are your thoughts on that list?
Well, if I was going to pick one, it'd be O'Brien Goodson. And that's not to take anything away from our defensive backs, but that guy's just wrecking careers and wrecking game plans.
Would he be your defensive player of the year? Isaac has Bryce Huff so far as a defensive player, but so you would have Goodson.
I would have Goodson. Listen. He was beating the Ole Miss offensive lineman so bad, I thought that he was going to own his car and his girlfriend by the end of the game. I mean, he owned him. And Dorsey's, it was so bad that Dorsey's ended up making plays because they were doubling down on Goodson. The center was going over and doubling down on Goodson, and Dorsey's was like, okay. Nobody going to block me? Okay. I mean, it was that bad. It was horrible. And then, you know, did anybody watch the first half against USA? I mean, he was in the backfield more than their quarterback. I mean, it was bad.
Yeah.
No,
he doesn't. When you,
so, yeah,
you look just at the numbers, yeah, even though if you look at the numbers, I mean, Goodson only has five total tackles, but you have to look at other things, you know, the QB hurries. I mean, he's disrupting everything. For me,
right.
My defensive player of the year so far, was Austin Hall. Even though he's third, you know, in
great
tackles,
great
J.J. Russell leading. J.J. Russell being I was surprised seeing that he leads the team in tackles because you don't hear his name very much when you're watching the broadcast. But when you take a look at Austin Hall, 12 tackles, I mean, he has the most disruptive behavior, in my opinion, so far, you know, on the defensive side, not on the defensive line. He has three pass breakups, two fumble recoveries, in that, fumble. Yeah, and a touchdown. So, to me, Austin Hall, there's a lot of players you can pick.
And at the end of the year, he may be the guy. But right now, I would go with Goodson. But I can certainly see, you know, the next – if you ask me who it's going to be at the end of the next nine games, yeah, you're probably right, it's going to be Austin Hall.
Now this next category would be newcomer of the year, not necessarily freshman, but maybe a new starter.
Right.
Who do you have as the newcomer of the year so far? Isaac picked
Cunningham. Yeah, Cunningham.
Yeah, he's
it's
been
not
disruptive.
Him, I don't know who it is. He makes some boneheaded plays, getting penalties and stuff like that. But that's a kid that you can tell is so excited about just playing football. That he's kind of you know, he gets out there and he's going, his feet are going faster than his brain. So when the game slows down for him, you'll see. But yeah, Everett Cunningham is got to be the newcomer so far.
There's three guys that you know, I thought of. You know, Cunningham, Quindell Johnson, because you know he was the overall rated the best defensive player Memphis had for you know, according to Pro Football Focus. But then Gainwell, I thought of Gainwell. He played just a little bit last year, but as far as you know, he's new starter coming in after Patrick Taylor's injury, and I mean, he's not worried about the pressure. I mean, there's got to be pressure on that. But according to his play, he's not feeling it.
No, I didn't count him because obviously he'd been here. But no, you're right about Johnson. I mean, Johnson, you know, it's a tough call. But one of the things, the reason I picked Cunningham was, we've needed somebody coming off that edge for so long, somebody who can disrupt.
Yes.
We still have trouble with containment, but somebody who can get up the field and make a play on a quarterback. And we've missed that for so long. And this kid is just, you know, you want to name Bryce Huff your MVP, defensive MVP? It's because of Cunningham on the other side.
No, I definitely agree with that. And that we may be all in agreement on the assistant coach of the year. Is there anything,
yes,
is there anything
we are,
more obvious
but,
than Fuller?
No, there's not. But I want to give a big shout out to Pete Limbo because he had big, gigantic, enormous shoes to fill. And I think our special teams haven't skipped a beat so far. And, you know, so there's no question Adam Fuller is the name, but don't let that overshadow the job that Pete Limbo's doing.
No, I definitely agree. You can actually argue maybe 1A, 1B. I think Fuller, because it's more high profile, you know, the defense, you know, so you can say he, you know, not necessarily deserves it more because I think both of them, you know, deserve it equally. Because that special teams, I mean, it's, you know, third of the game. And you, if you don't have good special teams, that can really affect your team. You can really, you know, lose it pretty quick.
So, you know, I heard, if you hang around the team, another name that you'll hear that say that, hey, this guy new come in, he's really helped out, and that's Alan Cross.
Yes.
People don't realize this, but Alan's coming on as graduate assistant, and he's doing yeoman's work, not just with the tight ends, but he's also working with special teams. And because people don't know that Alan was a tremendous special teams player for Memphis.
Yes, he was.
And so he's done a great job too. And I want to give that shout out because that young man has come in, and everything I've heard is he's been just absolutely wonderful.
Anything you've seen in the first three games that alter your preseason prediction of where Memphis would be at the end of the year? Or do you think it's, you know, everything you've seen, you're more confident than you were as your preseason goals? I think you had, what, 9-3 or 10-2?
Yes. 9-3 or 10-2, right? It could go either way. I'm more concerned about Brady than I was. When I went to fall camp and saw him, I thought, man, this guy is poised. His play against Ole Miss was bad. His play against Southern was okay. And his play against South Alabama was not good. Let's say it for what it was. He was poor. Mm-hmm. And he has to be better for us to get to where we want to be. That it's just that simple. He has to be better. Having said all that, I think our offensive line is better than I thought they were going to be. our defensive line is about what I thought they were going to be, but our defensive backs have been better so far. So
yeah, I agree
I think
with
it's
that.
Kind of a wash. I think it's a wash. I think at the end of the day, I still think we're going to win 9 or 10 games. The only thing that changes my thought on any of this is nothing that Memphis is doing. It's how much better the other teams in our conference are.
Yeah, no,
would
I
you
definitely
not agree
with
that?
Because there's some teams that that have surprised SMU has surprised me. So, you know, I knew Tulane would be better, but you know, them start. I think they're 3-1 right now. I mean, that sort of surprised me.
And their only loss was at Auburn, and it wasn't a bad one. I mean, you know, there's a lot of teams that would have gone to, you know, gone to the plains and gotten their brains beat in, and they sure didn't. They did not get their brains beat in. They go off.
Let me take
and they get killed.
Yeah, let me take our weekly caller. I believe this is Rowdy Rod. Are you there?
This is Rowdy Rod. How you doing, gentlemen? If Isaac is out there, I know he's blaming, he's sick and everything else. I got a sneak peek of him. It looked like Mike Tyson punched him right between the eyes with that sinus infection going on. So anyway, I just wanted to say I hope you get well soon there, Isaac. Hey, so I wanted to kind of go back on to the Navy game a little bit, and I kind of messed up on one of my first calls I made. I called it the Battle of the Bones. That was UAB. Southern Miss was the Black and Blue Bowl. I think Navy has turned into our Black and Blue Bowl. What do y'all think, guys?
Yeah.
Right? It's a bruise-em game, right? We're going to run it down their throats.
Oh,
Brian,
yeah.
You and I talked a while back ago, right? And we're running and running and running. I'm hoping that Brady White can get some of those little screen passes and maybe some of those slants or something to kind of open it up a little bit for us. I think we're going to do well against them. People are kind of, you know, I'm right there with you, Larry, on the on Brady White a little bit, kind of a little concerned with him. You know, you said he was poised back in fall camp and stuff. And, you know, I'm thinking with him, do y'all think he's getting rushed? Do you think they're getting through the line on that pass rush?
I think it's in his mind.
You think it's in his head too? Okay. That was my next question. Is it in his head? You know, I think you're right, because there's several times I noticed in the South Alabama game that he started wanting to move out of the pocket and and not get planted. And there was really a good 5 yards before anybody was there. You know, I mean, you know, at least a good 5 yards. I noticed it a few times. But, you know, Brady, I think he'll do fine. I think he's going to I think they've got a good game plan. Fuller, y'all were talking about that triple option. You know, what I like about Coach Fuller is he's got that, you know, we're not going to try to cause turnovers. We're not going to go after turnovers as hard and as brittle, and then we're missing tackles and things like that. He's one of those guys, we're just not going to let you get anything, you know. And with Navy's run defense, you know, run offense, you know, and their running game, you know, what y'all said, 300 yards, it's going to be a true test for our defense and seeing what that defensive line's made of. We've got some of the best defensive backs I've seen since, I want to go back to probably some Tommy West years, early Tommy West years, and maybe a little bit before then, you know. But our defense is really going to have to tighten up against the team, in my personal opinion, and really just stop that run, and then open it up a little bit with some screens, and some screen out passes to a few players. Pop Williams, you know, he's out for the season. Who do y'all think is going to replace him?
Probably Samuels, if I had to bet.
My first thought was Samuel, but I have a sneaky suspicion that, you know, Calvin Austin may get that in there because he's a track star. So either one of them.
Right. I was just curious. I mean, I've been wanting to see a little bit more of Samuel, but this Calvin Austin kid, good gracious, man, I understand it's just raw talent, you know, it's raw speed. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, they'll give them, yeah, it's just raw speed, not, you know, and I think that you know, they give him a shot, you know, Austin a shot, you know, I think that he might come through for us also. But I'm really excited about this game. You know, I mean, it's a Thursday game. You know, I did some looking back, and, you know, Memphis turns out for those Thursday games against Navy, you know, and that kind of, you know, so it's, I think we had 55,000 in attendance one year against them, which was huge. You know, that's a big, I think that was a weekday game. So the, I'm looking for the fans to show up. You know, I would say 45 to 48,000 people out there screaming because we're what, 3-1? No, yeah, it's 3-1 with Navy. So I think it's time for us to kind of start even that score a little bit. But I'm going to call the game, okay? I say that Memphis is going to surprise everybody, okay? I think our passing game is going to open up a little bit because they're going to be keying in on Gainwell a little bit. There's going to be more people committed towards him and Watkins both because they've both been doing phenomenal jobs. And I think Brady's going to be able to just open it up just a little bit, get some of those screen passes, spread them out a little bit, and then just then be able to attack the run game against them. So I'm going to call it out. First team to 30 is going to win it. I'm going to say 38-24 Tigers.
It is pretty close to what we had.
Yeah. No, is that I missed part of the call. I was on the phone with my mom, so anyway, part of the show. So anyway, so Larry, you know, y'all have been doing a good job, man, really good. I just want to say, Isaac, hope you feel better. Keep pounding the Twitter. It doesn't take too much brain activity on that one. So y'all have a good one, okay?
I appreciate it.
Take care.
Oh, Rowdy Rod, I love him. Before we before we get out of here, any final thoughts?
I think you know, this is should be a game. First of all, there'll probably be quite a few Navy fans there, and that's great. We really hope you guys are there. They're always fantastic fans to sit around. They're always great. You know, make sure and shake their hands, thank them for being there because they're always great fans. This isn't like Houston or any of those fans that we just want to, you know, force choke. these are good fans. So, and then the other thing I want to add is that I think that Memphis, this is going to be a really determining factor in what I like to call the second quarter of the season. Because if you win this game, that's going to set a tone going to ULM and then to Temple. So if you can get the next quarter of the season and you can win those three, which they're all winnable games, all three of these are winnable games, we're going to be favored most likely, assuming we beat Navy and we beat ULM, we'll be favored going to Temple. They're all winnable games. We should probably win them all. So it's really important to get this because, like you said, we've never been 4-0 under Norvell. So
that's correct.
And I think it's really critical. So as for the fans, hey, go out, have a good time. I know Thursday's a tough game, tough night to get to. You can't really tailgate. You can't really do the normal stuff, but go out, get, you know, if you don't get there till 6, that's cool, that's fine. That's probably what I'm going to do, is get there around 6 o'clock, and but, you know, be rowdy, enjoy the game, because this is easily the most enjoyable team that we get to play all year, because these are all these kids that we're going to be playing against are good, solid young men. We know that. The other thing is, you know, be good sportsmen, and hopefully we win the game. But whatever happens, just be good sportsmen because that's what this game, this particular game, is all about.
And you and John have a podcast Tuesday night. It's 7 o'clock, correct?
Yes, we're gonna do one Tuesday. This will be our Anchors Away segment, and we normally have. And I think John was telling me he's got someone from the coaching staff again this year coming on. We normally have someone from the staff come on and talk about, and we normally we spotlight one of the players. I don't know who it's going to be this year. In fact, I honestly haven't sat down, John, and I hadn't talked about it yet. It may be Perry now that you've mentioned him, but we normally spotlight one of the young men, and you know, we sort of go across. with the coach about what they're doing, you know, what their day is like. So, yeah, listen in Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, and John and I will have a breakdown of the Navy players and the Navy coaching staff.
Always a good listen. Larry, appreciate you coming on. Isaac, get better, and until next week, and hopefully we'll come back next Sunday with a W. Have a good one.